At the start of the show, I say it's episode 335, but it is really 336. It is still absolutely fantastic. Jill Coleman is the best. Here it is. Hello, welcome back to the FitCast. This is episode number 335. My name is Kevin Larrabee, and I'm very happy to have back on the show Jill Coleman. Jill, what's up?
Nothing. What's up? So thanks so much for having me. I feel like last time we just like barely scratched the surface of all the stuff I wanted to talk about, so I'm so glad that you asked me back.
I know, and it was one of those crappy situations on my part where I was like, oh yeah, let's do one in like 2 weeks, and that was like 6 months ago.
Right, but that always happens. That's just normal. That's regular.
I have problems juggling, and now with all the other projects, sometimes things get lost in the shuffle. But then we reconnected with Jen Sinclair. I guess it was 2 weeks ago now to record a gender-free segment, which we did another one for this episode too for the Patreon supporters. But after talking for like an hour on that, like okay, we just gotta make sure we get it done. And you're helping me out because we're recording this before I go to Tokyo to make sure that there are no missed weeks.
Again, awesome.
Thanks to those Patreon supporters of the show. So first off, let's get right into it because we got tons of questions. And I thought this was like really cool from Colt. We'll start with a business question.
Awesome.
He says, I always enjoy your advice on mindset in business. He wanted to know how to prioritize when there are 10 ideas on your plate. Do you do it based on impact or time, et cetera? How do you decide what to do first?
Yeah, that's such a great question. And you know, I always love talking business. And I think when you're first getting started in the, I think maybe he's assuming he's talking about online business, like blogging and social media and things like that. When you're just getting started, it feels really overwhelming because everything feels really important. So you have like 10 things and it's really hard to decide out of those 10 things that you feel like you have to do, which ones are going to make the biggest impact. So for me, I always categorize based on two things. Number one, first and foremost is what I'm excited about. I always have to go where the passion is and where the excitement is. So wherever the enthusiasm is for myself, I will always start there. And then based on those things, I will go, what will make the biggest impact? So it's hard, especially when you're getting started, because you don't really get paid when you start with online business at first, because you can't just throw up a program or a service and say, hey, buy my stuff. When no one really kind of knows who you are, or what you stand for. So a lot of the stuff that you do at the beginning, you have to do it to build goodwill and to kind of prime the pump, things like blogs and writing email, newsletters and putting out a ton of really free, awesome content on the internet, whether that's on social media or however that works. You have to be super generous at the beginning and give away a lot of really good value. Mm-hmm. And that's really hard to do because you just feel like I want to hurry up and make money, but you really can't do that until you have built the goodwill and you've really been extremely generous and given people the opportunity to get to know you and know what you're about and to trust you. And that takes, in my experience, a good 3 to 6 months minimum of like really building quality content and building up a body of work online, either on your blog or email list and things like that. You have to build that stuff first. So for me, think about what is going to prime the pump so that people can get to know, like, and trust you and know what you're about. So those are the kind of things. Little stuff, you can figure that stuff out on the way. Like a lot of, you don't really need to have like, your logo finalized. You don't have to have like your business account at the bank. Like you don't really have to have that. You don't have to have like a copyrighted, whatever business name. Like all that stuff will come in time. I would say start with creating amazing content straight from the heart. Go to where your passion is and just always think about how can I serve.
Do you think audio and video is more effective than writing for just in terms of like getting your personality out there? Because I feel like a lot of people are trying to not over exaggerate in their text, but they're trying to like, crack a lot of jokes and you're trying to get, that certain personality out there. And sometimes they fall flat. Do you think it's like a combo of the two, or, what do you recommend to start?
Yeah. Honestly, I think the thing that you do the best, start there.
Yeah.
Because I would never recommend someone do only video if they suck on video. You have to practice.
Yeah.
So some of my early videos really, really were bad. Super low energy. I was like mumbling. I was looking down. I wasn't loud. I mean, I was like slouched. I was super low energy. I think I even had like an electrical socket above my head. It looked like someone actually commented, "Are you in a prison cell?" Like, you have to really like practice and get better at video before you do that. And so you don't have to be perfect, but you do have to put in a good amount of practice. So writing might be the easiest way. Regardless, it is so, so important to create content. So, and it could be any kind of content. So even images, like on Instagram, you can take the images on Instagram. If you just feel like you love photos, use those and throw those up on Facebook or throw those into a blog. So you can do content via video, via, you know, photos, and then via writing. So free, but it also depends on what you want to do. If you want to be, you know, if you want to speak at conferences, then you have to show that you can actually speak. So you need to do videos. So it really depends on kind of what the way you want to work as well.
Melina wanted to know what a day is generally like for you, or I guess what your morning routine is generally like. How do you start the day?
Yeah, that's a great question. I always appreciate when people ask that. I love mornings. I'm always like most clear-headed in the morning. So I do a lot of my main creative work first thing in the morning. So I usually try and wake up around 6 o'clock, and I will usually write and work from like 6 to 9. That's my first kind of, I call it a block time. It's like a block of creative time. So I might get online, but a lot of times I will just focus on whatever is the thing I need to be doing that day, whether that's writing a blog, whether that's writing an email newsletter, whether that's creating a product or working on a product or service that I'm getting ready to launch. I'm always at the most creative in the morning. So I'll get coffee, do that usually from 6 to 9, and then I usually go and exercise around 9 o'clock. So that's kind of my best time. I have a workout partner. We train pretty hard, and then I'll come home and eat breakfast. And then usually I read and I take a lot of downtime. And you know what, Kevin, it wasn't always like this. I mean, I was a, what I call a fitness hustler for many, many years, working 70 to 80 hours a week in the gym. Mm-hmm. So personal training, teaching, you know, a dozen fitness classes a week, training 12 clients a day, like sessions a day, whatever that looks like. So I did that for a really, really long time until I started slowly moving out of the, you know, the in-person and building the online space. So right now I do take a lot of downtime. I do a lot of reading. I probably read about 4 hours a day, you know, business books, psychology books, things like that, just things that I feel like, and obviously fiction as well. And that kind of recharge time actually makes me more productive when I go back in the afternoon to work on my business again. So I have like usually about 2 time blocks a day. The first is in the morning and the second is usually in the afternoon, working on something, usually like close up social media, close up my email, turn my phone off and get busy and get really focused. But I get a lot more done in a short amount of time when I take those downtimes.
You said 4 hours of reading a day?
Yeah. Yeah. Close to it.
Is this is written text? This is not like I do audiobooks in the car and stuff like that when I'm walking my dog, but
it's, I would consider that reading. I mean, I don't usually do audiobooks if I'm on it. Like, usually I do a lot of leisure walking too, mm-hmm. which I know is kind of like weird. I would never have really considered myself a walker, but I get some of my best ideas and have my most creative moments when I'm walking. So I'll usually do 1 or 2 hour-long walks every day, and I'll either listen to a book or I'll listen to a podcast. I'm like pretty much obsessed with learning. So for me, it's like very important that I'm educating myself. And, you know, I'll read fiction and stuff too. I think it's important to kind of have that escapism. But, you know, we were talking before about pop culture, and we were talking before in our other interview about just shows and stuff. And honestly, I just like don't really watch TV, and it's not like a better than thing, but I would just much rather have my escapism be in books.
Fair enough. And just to reiterate, you know, getting great ideas while walking. I swear, when I walk my dog, like, I'm always, you know, pulling up my phone and like talking to Siri and saying like, make reminder to, you know, email someone about whatever.
And, oh my God. I come up with like the best, just like acronyms and like just ideas for programs and products and, you know, just insights that I don't have time to necessarily digest during the day. I'll be like, oh my God, that thing that happened yesterday. Now I have a second to like really think about that, and it'll give me an insight on something I want to talk about, or I want to teach, or I want to write about, or whatever. So I get a lot of my, and we talked on the other interview too about just traveling, and I'm the same way with travel too. If I'm on a plane, I do some of my best creative work on planes.
Yeah. I don't even, and it might have something to do with the weather, just because it, you know, there was a, the winter in Massachusetts was brutal this past winter. And yeah. I still, no matter what, I still walk my dog every day in the morning, at least once, if not twice, also in the afternoon. And I found that just like the distraction of the bitter cold made it a lot harder to think. And now that it's warmed up a little bit, I can almost like wear shorts when I, you know, take my dog for a walk now. Like I feel like the energy is completely different.
It's more relaxed.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
So it's like, even if don't think that you can do this, maybe you can do it like on a treadmill in a gym or something like that, but try to get outside and, get away from all the distractions that are in front of you, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's really hard. Like, I think it's easy to look at someone like, you know, kind of lifestyle I have now. And obviously, look, I don't have any kids, you know, I do full-time online business now, but you know, it took me about 5 years to go from when I first read, actually I read the book, The 4-Hour Workweek in 2007. And that was the first time I had thought that I had any control over my schedule. Cause before then I was just running around chasing money, really just like anyone who wanted to train anytime. I made myself available. I was just like, whatever you want to pay me. Like I was very scarcity mindseted, which is, you know, fine. And I think I was grateful for that time. And I spent hours and hours and hours in the trenches, which of course has really been valuable to me. But it was in 2007 that I slowly started making changes in my schedule, asking my clients if they could come at different times. I started increasing my rate. I started just really owning my worth and leveraging my time better. And it took me about 5 years, actually took me exactly 5 years from the time I started that whole process of getting out of the gym to when I finally quit my full-time job and went fully online in 2012. So, you know, it's easy to be like, oh, you can read 4 hours a day and go for two leisure walks. And like, but you know, it wasn't always like that for me. So I think if anyone's listening and goes like, oh, well, that's nice for her, just please realize that, you know, it's been a lot of conscious decisions along the way and it didn't happen overnight. And it wasn't because I was just like, you know, I don't know, like lucky. It really does take time and effort, but it's possible.
Were there any specific resources that helped you get into those routines? That you're in today, I should say.
Yeah, not so much. I mean, like one book for me was really, really important book called The Powerful Engagement by Tony Schwartz. And that book was the first time, it's all about energy management. So it's not about time management. It's about managing your energy so that you can be more productive. Because what I was doing was I was running on 50% of the time. I was running on 50% energy all the time. And so what this book talks about is how when you take downtime strategically, like going on leisure walks or reading or, you know, meditating or, you know, exercising even, any of those things, when you take them consciously and really allow yourself permission to not be having to do a bunch of stuff, when you take those downtimes, you're actually more productive when you come back to the desk and work. And I didn't believe it at first because I always felt like I was in the running for like world's busiest person award. Like to me, that was how I had a sense of self-worth, was being to the gym super early, staying at the gym all day, all night, you know, just being very like motivated by how busy I was. If I talked to someone, I'd be like, oh my God. And it was almost like I was trying to seem like I didn't have control of my own schedule, which is just BS. It's just not true. But when this book, I read this book for the first time, it was the first thing that had given me permission to really take strategic downtime or away time. And for me, that's been a huge game changer. So that's why I do have this kind of ebb and flow of work, rest, work, rest, work, rest throughout the day.
Just want to say in that thread that you put up on Facebook, Crystal said that she's a supporter of the FitCast, so she gets those episodes early. Damn right you, Jill. Sorry, Crystal.
Is it Crystal Bacora?
It is Crystal. Did I say Jill twice? Because
no, Crystal like, Bacora, right?
I'm in the middle of looking at the next question and then it starts with Jill.
No
so maybe I didn't dial in my caffeine like I should have today. Who knows? so we got a question from Janine. This is a little bit of a longer one. Recently, I've had the itch to run another marathon. Back in my earlier marathon days, I felt, quote, bulky and definitely not lean. Since then, I've completely changed my eating, higher protein and dietary fats, and my workouts are a combination of metabolic circuits and heavy lifting. Very CrossFit-like. My body and physique has responded beautifully. Is it possible to incorporate the metabolic effect fitness and nutrition principles and run a successful marathon without getting into the cardio cycle and carbohydrate binge?
Yeah, that's such a great question. And you know what? I do think it's possible, especially because you've kind of, it sounds like you fueled your metabolism quite a bit by increasing your protein intake, by going with more heavy weight training. Those things tend to restore, I think, you know, if you tend to be someone who did a lot of long duration exercise, you might have been in metabolic compensation. I think that's what you're talking about is from metabolic effect. In my husband's new book, Lose Weight Here, which just came out this week, goes into what's called metabolic compensation, where your metabolism doesn't respond appropriately because you've been doing excessive exercise and, like, you know, maybe restrictive dieting practices. But you can keep your metabolism responsive even when you're training for a long duration activity, so long as you do two things. Number one, you have to make sure that you're matching your eating to your exercise. So that's really big. You can't be cutting calories while also increasing your activity. So high protein diet, high vegetable diet, you know, moderate fats, moderate starches, and then keep an eye on your hunger, energy, and cravings, or at metabolic effect, it's called HEC, H-E-C. And we say, is your HEC in check? You will know if your metabolism is staying responsive if your HEC stays in check. If your hunger, energy, and cravings stay in check, low hunger, low cravings, and then balanced energy, if you start to feel that that is going kind of haywire, you have to maybe pull back on exercise a little bit, take a look at your eating, and try and balance that first. Because if your HEC is way out of check or way out of whack, and you're trying to do a marathon, you are going to have those compensatory reactions with overeating, you know, binging, carbohydrate, you know, starch, sugar cravings, those kind of things. And you'll know if it's working based on if your HEC is in check.
Very cool. Kryn has the subject of sugar. It continues to be my weakest link. Any new enhanced strategies to kick that addiction to the curb?
Yeah, this is such a great question because I think there's people all over the board when it comes to sugar. And I actually feel you because honestly, I had such a sweet tooth. I think my entire high school experience was made up of, you know, sprees and Mountain Dew. And actually, one of my best friends is my dentist, so you know how bad it really got. Anyway, so I feel you. I totally do. And I grew up on sweets too. And over time, I was able to kick that habit. But I'll tell you one thing that I did. I always created some sort of nutritional relief in my day. So sometimes it would be some dark chocolate. Sometimes it would be some frozen yogurt. Sometimes it would be, you know, protein bars, protein shakes, things that weren't super over the top. I call these preemptive cheats. They're things that are not necessarily like the cleanest of foods, but they are going to be satisfying and satiating enough to take the edge off so that you don't go completely off the rails. A lot of times people say, if you're addicted to sugar, quote, I kind of hate the word addicted to sugar because to me it just like takes the onus off of you. It's basically like saying, oh, I'm an addict. Honestly, when it comes to sugar, yes, it can be a slippery slope, but that doesn't mean that you can't at the same time take ownership of that. So for me, what I started doing was just being more mindful and giving myself those preemptive cheats so that I learned to feel satisfied every single day. So I never got to the point where it was like, oh my God, Friday night's here. I'm going to eat like a whole, you know, bag of this, or I'm going to eat a whole package of cookies, or I never got to that point. And I had gotten there previously because I had deprived myself. Mm-hmm. So the whole idea behind preemptive cheats is that you don't deprive yourself to the point where you need to overindulge. So for me, I don't think that you should quit sugar cold turkey, like some people do. I think that you have to trust that you can handle it in more moderate doses, and you have to just practice that moderate approach. And that takes a lot of time. And it took me about 3 years to go from someone who had a very like black and white kind of on and off, all or nothing mindset when it came to sweets and treats, to someone who kind of has a little bit of something every single day and never feels the need to overindulge. So you do have to practice that. And there are a lot of blogs on Jill Fit that address this as well.
It's not going to be like immediately successful. Like you're going to have, you know, 3 days of success and then there might be a failure and stuff like that.
No, I mean, here's the thing is like, you shouldn't even look at it that way. Like, honestly, just look at today. Mm-hmm. What can I do today that will help me feel satisfied today so that when I get to tomorrow, I won't feel as deprived? So when you get to Friday, you won't feel as deprived. So I always say that how you eat on Monday directly impacts how you will eat, choose to eat on Friday. And what I mean by that is if you learn to take the edge off earlier in the week with things that aren't super, super bad, like, you know, I mean, I'm not like you shouldn't eat like a whole dozen Krispy Kreme donuts on Monday to take the edge off, but give yourself, I don't know, a third of a chocolate bar. What's the big deal on a Monday? Even though traditionally we go, oh, you can't have that because it's Monday. I would rather you have a little something on Monday. So when you get to Tuesday, you feel more satisfied. You have a little something on Tuesday. So when you get to Wednesday, you feel a little more satisfied. Hmm. And then it goes throughout the week. So when Friday comes along, you're just like, oh, it's just like any other day. There's no like, you know, like illicitness or anything about Friday that makes you feel like, oh, it's the weekend, because you're just coming into the weekend already satisfied.
How do you feel about, you know, when people try to substitute one thing for a healthier version, whether it be, you know, instead of having, you know, three Oreos, I'm going to have like one of those cookies and cream Quest bars or something like that. Mm-hmm. Do you think that, you know, it's good to almost take a sidestep like that, or, you know, maybe Okay.
I do actually. No, I'm very much into that. So that's actually how I end up doing it. I started actually doing like more sugar-free options, which I don't necessarily think are the healthiest things, but it did help me still stay satisfied and get the taste of chocolate or get the taste of frozen yogurt with the sugar-free version. So of course we can have the conversation about, you know, artificial sweeteners versus natural and all of that stuff. But honestly, for me, the idea that you're never going to have sugar again, or that you're never going to have the taste of sweet, or you're never going to want the taste of sweet, I think is just absurd. And I think a lot of people think they should just get to the point where they never crave sweets. And I think that's just short-sighted. So for me, it's about how do I still feel satisfied with something that's not all the way bad, but it's also not like, quote, the perfect choice. So to your point, Kevin, could you have something that's kind of in the middle? For me, if you need to have a couple Quest bars in a day, just have them if that's what makes you feel satisfied, or have sugar-free chocolate, or have sugar-free frozen yogurt, or, you know, make some healthier version of a cookie with almond meal instead of, you know, flour and sugar. You can make different alternatives. And to me, that's like kind of the next step. You can't really go a cold turkey, nor do I think you should, because I think that backfires.
I'm trying to figure out how I want to ask this question, but I'm kind of curious what your thoughts are on what are people missing? The people that are, you know, they still go to the gym, they train, they don't necessarily have the physique that they want versus, you know, I guess, I don't know if you'd call them like the pros, but like the people that are sometimes envied, and like the people that you see in the CrossFit competitions, or, you know, people that just seem to like not have any struggles with this stuff at all when it comes to their nutrition. That's a weird question. I was just thinking about it as we were talking about like trying to like make substitutions and stuff like that. But
well, you know what's interesting, Kevin, is like I was in the bodybuilding community for a really long time, and I was doing figure competitions, and I was doing fitness modeling, and there's a lot of like smoke and mirrors in that industry. Mm-hmm. Not everybody, but for the most part, everyone that I've come across, to like any of my friends who I know have been in the magazines or have won shows, they're all having the same struggles. 99% of them are having the exact same struggles as anyone else. Hmm. They still love sugar. They still have to figure out a way to circumvent those cravings, right? Like we're all doing the same thing. I mean, maybe if you're just like a machine, or you're like one in a million, might just be like, I could take or leave sweets. Fine. If that's you, that's amazing. But I think perpetuating the idea that there's a big amount of people who just don't have any issues, I think that's really short-sighted. I think it does us a disservice, because I think that's what we're trying to compare ourselves to. And then we end up feeling bad because we're not. And so just from my perspective, the pros, they cheat too. They like sugar too. They're trying to figure it out too. You know, and a lot of them have come to me later and said, I did shows, and for me, it completely messed up my mindset. I want to figure out a way to not be that obsessed with food. And I think for me anyway, that journey from, you know, very elite fitness to more of like I want to be able to go through my life and not be miserable. Mm-hmm. Like I think that took a long time, you know, but you have to be ready for that. And I think everyone is entitled to their own journey, but the idea that there's a huge group of people who are not having the same struggles, I think it just kind of does us a disservice. Sure, they're an anomaly though. There's a few, but other than that, I mean, everyone's kind of the same.
Nicole has a question. I guess she says the question is about not overeating. I always have a hard time listening to my body's, quote, hunger cues, but I know tracking calories leads to food obsession, so I try not to. So any strategies to avoid overeating?
Yeah. You know, honestly, a lot of my strategies around overeating come down to two things. One, never getting to the point of feeling deprived. So I know that sounds a little counterintuitive because you're like, well, I don't want to, like, feeling deprived to me, does nothing but eventually lead to overindulgence or binging or overeating, whatever that looks like. So you do have to take the edge off earlier. So that's where things like preemptive cheats come in. That's where things like finding nutritional relief every day. And, you know, I don't want people to get the wrong, when I say satisfied, I don't mean stuffing yourself. That's not satisfying either, right? That's stressful too. So that's not really what it's about. It's about finding that perfect middle point between just feeling satisfied enough that you can get till the next day. Because I think it does come down to how much are you restricting yourself and how much are you depriving yourself. And of course, if you're going to be depriving and restricting, you're going to overeat. That's just like physiologically, you can never win a battle of wills with your physiology. You're just going to want to eat. So the other thing, of course, is mindfulness. And that takes time as well. And I kind of hate using the word mindfulness because it feels really like nebulous and like people don't really know what it means, or they do, but they've kind of like, they've just seen it too much that it doesn't really have a lot of meaning anymore. Mm-hmm. But mindfulness is literally just watching yourself and being aware of what you're doing. So I have what's called like kind of extreme awareness to the point of obsession. And then the other side of the spectrum is maybe what this woman is talking about, which is kind of what I call brain shutdown mode. It's when you're just like eating nonstop and you're pretending like it's not happening. You're just like, oh, I'll just, you know, you just like don't even want to acknowledge the fact you just want to eat because you just want to eat. And that's totally fine, but that's zero mindfulness in that moment. So could you find that middle point on the spectrum between obsessive awareness to the point of restriction and then brain shutdown mode, which is I don't want to think at all, being right in that middle point? And that's a practice. It's really, really easy to go into brain shutdown mode. Like, but how do you kind of stop right in the middle? And that's where mindfulness comes in. And mindfulness is a practice, and it's just automated thinking. It's like watching yourself from up above and asking those questions like, how full am I right now? How hungry am I right now? Where are my cravings right now? What's my energy like right now? And again, that's a practice. But, and I always hate talking about mindfulness because it's really just like, how do you start being more mindful? You just start, like you just have to start like today, be like, okay, how's my hunger? How are my cravings? How full am I in this moment? Could I stop eating right now and still feel satisfied? And a lot of it comes down to, for me anyway, eating to 80% fullness is a practice in mindfulness, because by nature at 80% fullness, you could eat more, right? So that's hard, because how do you stop at 80% when you could eat more? You want to eat more. So for me, that's been a huge practice and has really helped me with the mindfulness aspect. So those are the two things: preempt those feelings of deprivation and then practice mindfulness. And it takes a long time. Like I said, it took me about 3 years.
I've been looking more into like stuff, how like our environment affects us. And, one of the techniques that I've been trying, because, you know, still these days, like, I'll be at home working, like I'll work at home all day. And then sometimes you just like end up looking, oh man, I just ate like a bunch of food, not garbage, but you're like, yeah, just because I was kind of bored, you know, in between work, I was chowing down on some stuff. I've been trying just like, I just go outside for like 15 minutes, or I get in my car and I drive somewhere with my dog, or even if it's just like going down to the store, if I don't need anything, I'll like go down and I'll buy like, you know, some fruit or something like that, and then come back. And then just getting out of like a stale environment, like kind of flips the boredom switch really easily, if that's a cause for it.
Yeah. You know, there's so many, actually I wrote, if you go to jillifit.com at the blog, and if you search emotional eating, there's like a whole blog post on that too.
Boom. You got a ton of stuff on there.
There's like 500 something blogs on there. It's crazy.
How often do you write? Do you like twice a week?
No, right now I do about once a week, but for the first 2 years of Jillifit, I was writing Monday through Friday.
So that was your whole, that's what you were talking about before. You got to like kind of build up.
You got to build it up. Yeah. Like you got to like earn the right to like, to blog once a week. That's the way I see it. You know, I do, I think we talked about this last time, that I have the Best of You coaching program, which is my mentorship. It's an annual program for women who want to start businesses online. And, you know, the first thing I tell the girls is CCC. It's constant content consistently. It's like CCC. You have to be doing that, because that's how, the only way that people are going to get to know you and trust you is if you're telling them what you're about. And you have to be doing that constantly. And I've been doing my business for almost 5 years now, and I still have to do it. You still have to always create content and give people the opportunities to connect with you.
I want to take this little halftime break to thank a couple of our Patreon supporters, people that are supporting the show through patreon.com. That's patreon.com/thefitcast. There you can support the show. We're starting at just $1 per episode, about $4 per month helps make sure that these episodes get produced 4 times a month and that they continue to show up in your iTunes feed. Patreon supporters also get access to episodes 1 week early. Plus, they get the exclusive agenda-free FitCast series where, like we mentioned a couple times before, it kind of goes all over the place talking about travel, even personal development stuff, habits. Like it just kind of goes all over the place. Sometimes it has to do with, you know, trying to figure out how science fiction justifies why everyone speaks English. But literally, like, these are, you know, we're talking about up to 3 hours of extra content every single month that is going to those Patreon supporters from your favorite guests from the FitCast. So you will get access to all that stuff. And again, you will, you know, help make sure that this show keeps going. So thank you to everyone out there that is supporting the show. Just like Emma Fuller, I'm not going to say a ton of last names. I don't know if people mind saying last names or not, but Meredith Fritz. We'll kind of scroll down here a little bit. We got Isabel L., which I'm not going to even try to pronounce that last name. And then Donovan Manley just jumped on board at $2 per episode. So thank you to everyone that is supporting the show. It means a lot. And again, it's patreon.com/thefitcast. It's 2 seconds to set up, like 2 minutes literally to set up, and then you'll be helping out the show. So let's continue. We got a couple other questions. I feel like we're kind of jumping all over the place, which is how I like it, kind of mixing it up. And let's go to this question from another Jill. Just finished LWH, loved it, but I also love me some lift weights faster and met 10 workouts. How do I effectively incorporate these with ELEL and EMEM? Thanks. So we got some acronyms to straighten out.
Yeah, we do. Okay, cool. So she's referring to, like I said, the new book that came out this week, Lose Weight Here, is Jade's book. And in the program, there's 2 protocols. One is called ELEL. That's eat less, exercise less. Mm-hmm. And then the second is obviously EMEM, eat more, exercise more. And the idea behind these things is that you have to, like we talked about earlier, you have to kind of match your food to your activity level. You get in trouble when you exercise a lot and eat very little, which we kind of know, and you also get in trouble, obviously, when you don't exercise and you eat a lot, right? So those are kind of the 2 things that you want to look at. And ELEL and EMEM just basically says when you're exercising more, eat more. And when you're exercising less, you should eat less. And you should have periods of time where you do both of those things, because we can't go like balls to the wall all the time. So ELEL is one of the method to kind of slowly, just get your metabolism a little bit more responsive, because some, like a lot, at least at Jill Fit and Metabolic Effect, we have a lot of women who are, you know, they're fitness enthusiasts. They read everything. They consume all nutrition information. So they're very savvy. And a lot of times they can get into trouble with metabolic damage, adrenal burnout, things like that. So ELEL is the first way to go with that. It's really hard, especially for someone who's used to exercising a lot, right? So it's really hard to ask them to not exercise as much and do things like leisure walking and foam rolling and, sauna and steam room and just like more recovery workouts. It's really hard to ask them to do that, but that's what their metabolism needs for a little bit. So if the question was, how do I incorporate more metabolic conditioning work?
All right, so just a quick heads up that my internet at my house completely just died. Comcast is not really doing a great job today making sure my internet is stable. So we are jumping back in now with Jill, and hopefully the great folks at T-Mobile will make this podcast possible.
So I think I was just saying, like, so if you're looking at something like the lift weights faster workouts from Jen Sinclair or Metabolic 10, which are metabolic effects workouts, or CrossFit, I consider all of those to be kind of under the same roof of metabolic conditioning. And mm-hmm. I think if you want to sprinkle those in to your EMEM, then you can do that, but you have to be doing slow and heavy weight training on alternate days. Mm-hmm. So yes, do metabolic conditioning once or twice a week, totally fine. But you have to have those days where you're really putting some weight on the bar and you're getting, and the workouts are a little bit longer, a little bit slower. Your metabolism needs that stuff as well. You can't be like constantly doing metabolic conditioning workouts. So that hopefully answers that. When you're in ELEL, the primary way you're exercising or the activity is going to be more rest and recovery workouts. So those would be things like leisure walking, foam rolling, stretching, light yoga, things like that. Doing those things most days, and then having 1 or 2 days of weight training. So you might be able to do 1 day of metabolic conditioning and then 1 or 2 days of heavy weight training. But it really should not, the emphasis should not be on intensity at all when you're doing ELEL. And I know that's really hard because we like to get in the gym, we like to sweat, we like to just go balls to the wall. But honestly, when your metabolism is broken or unresponsive, you need to give it that downtime to heal. You can always go back to that once you have your heck is in check, right? Hunger, energy, and cravings back in check. And you've given it, I think in the book, it's like 4 to 8 weeks on ELEL, and then you can come back in and go full steam ahead on EMEM.
Very cool. And this is like magic. I'm tethered to my T-Mobile iPhone 6 that has like no signal at my house, and we're still able to do this, which is
it's amazing.
It is. This is the future. Like, it doesn't really need to get much better than this. are you going to spring for the Apple Watch to check that out when it comes out?
You know what? I'm not. I do love Apple, and I have the iPhone 6 and everything, and I just got a new iPad yesterday. But no, I can't. My husband's really into that, so he already pre-ordered the watch. Nice. But I'm not a watch person.
I'm just not a watch person.
Has to have.
Exactly. So at least you get to try. I'm super. Let's see. 2 episodes ago, since I'm recording this ahead of time, I talked to Georgia Dow, who is like she's an Apple. She covers Apple, and. It sounds like what they could possibly do with like the fitness tracking stuff is super interesting. And, the laboratory they have, because I know like with, whether it's like Fitbit or Nike Fuel, like they're all inaccurate, like they're all pretty bad. And, I guess that's what you get when you spend $400 instead of $99.
Right.
For a fitness tracker. But,
I mean, we'll see. I mean, I don't know. I'm going to probably check out his, but for the most part, I think maybe it's just a guy thing. I don't know. I don't know. I know a lot of women who do the Fitbits and stuff like that. I think it's very important to do that kind of work. Like, I actually am more of a believer than ever in like low intensity activity all day long. Like, mm-hmm. I think before I was kind of like a gym rat, and I was like, well, that's for, that's for your grandmother or something, like walking and stuff. But now I really do see that that has been, if at least for me, has been a huge game changer. So I do think that there's value in that. What I've seen is that's funny is that I think a lot of people can get caught up in like the competitive aspect of it, which on one hand is really motivating, but it can get a little obsessive.
True. Very, very true. Yeah. Always curious about that stuff. All right. We got a question from a friend and Patreon supporter, Mark Crabtree, who I see every year at the Chicago Perform Better Summit. His question is, implementing the moderation mindset with people who are significantly overweight, do they follow the same journey, or do they need to have more of a structured plan to break habits and then slowly loosen up?
You know what? That's such a great question. And I get this a lot to people, because obviously at Jill Fed, I talk a lot about moderation, a lot about being in maintenance mode, a lot about things being easy. And I think we have this idea that in order to get results, things have to be really hard, right? I think we hang on to the idea that there needs to be a lot of sacrifice and a lot of structure and a lot of willpower and things like that. And I don't know that there shouldn't be. But to Mark's point, I think there is a journey that one goes on. I think it's really, first of all, my most important thing, even if you are someone who has a lot of weight to lose, you still have to figure out a way to feel satisfied during the day. So for example, it might be doing something like you and I talked about, Kevin, where people find more of a moderate choice instead of going full on sugar, full on, like all on, I call this Frappuccino or bust. You know, at Starbucks, they have those Frappuccinos, right? And like, I don't know if you see people getting Frappuccinos all the time, but I think it's almost because it's like, it feels like a special occasion where at Starbucks, I'm going to get what I really want, which is like a venti, mocha Frappuccino, instead of, because I think people think the alternative has to be a black coffee, which no one really wants that either. You know what I mean? So I think it's a mistake to think that there's not a middle road. So it doesn't have to be Frappuccino or bust. You can find something in the middle that still satisfies you. So maybe that would look like the person maybe starting with some more sugar-free options, or something like a healthier version of a baked good, or using something like dates that are maybe a little bit healthier option for a sweet, because I do feel like there's no way that you're going to make sustainable change with your physique if you're completely depriving yourself all the time. So, because it's always going to end up being leading to overindulgence, whether that's next week, next month, or a year from now. You just can't be deprived without any relief. So I would like for people to preempt that by trying to find some relief nutritionally in their day or at least in their week. So I think in my experience, the best place that people can start is with cheat meals. I'm like pretty anti-cheat meal personally, because I think it does kind of continue to set up the expectation that sometimes you're on your diet and sometimes you're off your diet. But I think that's the 1.0. I think the 1.0 is to move to a more cheat meal option or a treat meal, whatever you want to call it, because that does keep you a little bit more compliant during the week. But eventually, I would like to see everyone move to a place where they don't feel like they have to wait to feel satisfied. So they are able to build that in every day. So for them, it might just be different options, experiencing different foods. You might have to be a little more strict in your food choices, but I don't believe that that means you can't feel satisfied too. You don't have to like suffer for results.
Have you ever heard of the Dompio something something at Starbucks?
Yeah, the Dompio espresso?
Is that what it is? It's like two shots of espresso with the whipped cream on top?
Yep.
That's like the official drink of the Certified Functional Strength Coach crew. Whenever we're traveling, we always get Dompios.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I definitely think that that's better than Frappuccino or a bus, because I remember when I was competing and stuff, I would have these, I'd be like, oh, I can only have black coffee. And it was almost like I didn't, and some people love black coffee, and believe me, if you love it, then like you're lucky. But for me, I need like cream and sweetener in mine. And I don't know that I will ever give that up, because for me, that is completely satisfying. Now, if I had a Frappuccino, I'd feel disgusting. Mm-hmm. It would be like over, and I think everyone does, right? Like, I don't know one person that has a Frappuccino is like, I feel amazing. I think everyone feels awful when they eat them, but we don't know till after. Because it's like the idea of it, it makes it so like yummy or whatever that is. But if you choose something in the middle, I think having the experience of satisfaction on something like a Dompio or, you know, an Americano with cream and sweetener, like you can have the experience of feeling satisfied with those things. And the more you do it, the more you don't want the other stuff. You don't want the black coffee, and you also don't want to go full on Frappuccino. So that's just an example, but obviously it can be extrapolated for any restaurant, right? Anytime you go to the Cheesecake Factory, you don't have to get cheesecake. You can still get something that tastes amazing that's not like full-on cheesecake. You can go to any restaurant and choose something in the middle that's still going to taste good to you. So I think that's a practice.
That's not true. If you go to a Cheesecake Factory, I've never eaten at one in my life.
But what?
Yeah, no.
Oh, my God. I mean, I guess, you know, and it's funny because I go to Cheesecake Factory all the time, like whenever I try, because, you know, it's consistent. You know what the thing is, and they have really good salads that I enjoy that have cheese and bacon and stuff like that. So I'll do that stuff, but I hardly ever get cheesecake because it doesn't, because that's the whole problem. I feel like it's like if we're at a restaurant, I think it's a mistake to make it be like this big once in a lifetime opportunity. That's why we still struggle, because we keep putting food up on this pedestal. It's just cheesecake. You can go get it at your local grocery store anytime, and it probably tastes the same as it would at the Cheesecake Factory. So I think it's like taking food off this pedestal of like, it's so special and it's so yummy and it's, I'll never have another opportunity. I think we build it up to the point where we have to have it, when in reality, food is always around. We can always get any food anytime. And that's more of an abundance mindset. So that's part of, I do a food obsession bootcamp course, and we talk a lot about abundance mindset and how to, in those moments, switch how you think about it so that you don't have to go full on Frappuccino or bust.
Did you watch Louie at all?
No.
Okay.
Well, you know, I don't watch it. I know. Don't watch anything.
All right. Well, this is Louis C.K., comedian. Oh,
I mean, I know who he is. Yeah.
So, he has a show, and this is really good. Like, it's always broken up into like two parts, like two 10 minute stories. And there's one story, he's out with his brother and it's really hot out and they're sweating and they're kind of like, you know, overweight, and his brother a little bit more so. It's like, yeah, it's about time we start going to the gym. So then they basically have like a last, like the last meal, which they do, what do they call it? They call it like a double double. Well, they'll go to one place, like they go to this Indian place, stuff themselves till they cannot eat anymore. Then they go to a diner and get a second meal. And that's like, this is the last time we're ever going to eat this garbage. Oh my God. We're going to start getting in shape. And then, then they get, you know, done. And Like, oh, so I'll see you at the gym tomorrow morning. No, I'm kind of busy tomorrow. And then you just end up never going. That just made me think.
And we're doing that all the time. Like, to me, like, you know, but we're treating every meal that's not in our homes just like that. So I think, like, normalizing dining out, even though a lot of, like, I dine out because I hate to cook. So I know a lot of people are like, well, I eat at home and I enjoy cooking. That's fine. But don't, like, anytime you do go to a restaurant, let's just normalize it. Mm-hmm. Like, let's just, because I don't know about you, but if I get something at a restaurant that someone makes me that has butter and cheese on it, I'm like, this is amazing, right? I don't need to go full on dessert and bread basket and a bottle of wine. And like, I think you can kind of pick and choose your battles. So I don't know. That's part of my message. And it's taken me a long time because I used to be the person who was like, no, I'm not splitting a dessert. I'm getting my own. Thank you. You know, like it takes a while. It takes a lot of introspection work, but it's not impossible.
My dog is sitting in front of me expecting his lunch, his dinner meal. So that's kind of like the sign that we got to wrap things up. He has that look like I'm almost neglecting him because I'm not feeding him at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. But yeah, he's a spoiled little dog. But the before we wrap up, of course, the main hub is JillFit.com.
Yes.
And anything else that people should keep an eye out for, things that are coming up?
You know what? Not much is coming up except for in July. I'm actually, I don't know when this is going to go up, but
this
in July.
Be up in 3 weeks, 2 weeks.
Okay. Awesome. Just for people to get on their mental calendar, I have a really successful online program called the 10-Week Mindset Makeover, and I've been doing that program for a few years now. I've had literally thousands of people go through the program, and it's been awesome. I'm doing a 2.0 version, a brand new product in July. Super excited about it. It's going to be the Mindset Makeover 2, and it's going to be like even more in-depth on mindset and how you think about food and exercise and your relationships and really complete ownership. It's actually called Radical Responsibility, and I'm so excited to create that and roll that out in July. But that's the next thing. But that's so everything is good here. Just to get Europe on the brain.
So are these primarily not like exclusive to women? But do you have men that sign up for these too?
I do. Yeah, I have a lot of, it's about my audience is about 95% women.
Sure.
So a lot of the rhetoric is like ladies and women and us girl, like it's a lot of like that kind of thing. So I tend to just to say that. But no, I've had men go through Mindset Makeover, and it's not necessarily so much about like female specific problems. It's about nutrition and exercise and how we think about that process. But then it's also a lot around like personal development and perfectionism and relationships and taking ownership and, creating the life you want. So it's a lot of kind of personal development and introspection work too. So yeah, I have a good amount of men that go through it too.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. I got to get back to, I set up a new reader for all my blogs, the people that I read and stuff like that. I get to catch up, and then I get a 14-hour
awesome.
Flight to do it. So,
cool.
Yeah. I've been going through it as we've been talking today. You got so much awesome stuff up in your blog that people need to check out. So that's JillFit.com. And also, if you're on Twitter, that's what all the kids are using these days, at JillFit. And that way you can also make sure you're staying up to date. And then on Facebook, you have a Facebook group as well for JillFit.
Yep. It's just Facebook.com/JillFit. Instagram is JillFit. So
I never caught
super
the Instagram
easy.
Thing.
Everyone oh,
I
no.
Work with. Yeah.
It's like, it's actually like pretty much the number one. It's definitely my number one platform at this point, just in terms of what I enjoy personally. Facebook, of course, nothing is still the most robust, and it's still where we get the most engagement. But Instagram is picking up steam.
Maybe I'll start using that. I registered like 8 years ago and haven't used it. So I have my name. All right. Well, that is going to wrap it up for this episode. Don't forget to check out the show on iTunes. You can submit reviews on there. You can follow me at Kevin Larrabee on Twitter, at Fitcast for the show. And like I said, if you want to support the show and get all that extra content plus episodes about a week early, you can go to patreon.com/thefitcast. So much great stuff on Jill's website, and then also coming up on the show in the future. So yeah, Jill, let's try not to wait like another 6 months to do this. But if the audience, like if you got questions for Jill, start sending them in now. So when we, have like abundance, I can just say, hey, Jill, I know you're in Paris, but I need you to jump on Skype. So
right, and I might be like, I don't know, Kevin, I'm drinking wine right now, so I might not be available. But we can play it by ear. I would love to be back on. Thanks. Is
done. It's our time for having fun. I'm gonna party hard until the sun comes up. The music feels so good. Dance.